This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. I'm Jared Brumbaugh. On Tuesday, North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Wayne Goodwin signed a settlement agreement with homeowners insurance companies, allowing an average rate increase of 7% across the state. It could have been worse. According to a press release, the North Carolina Rate Bureau requested an overall statewide average rate increase of 17.7%. The difference between the requested and the settled rates amounts to $237 million in savings to policyholders. Some eastern North Carolina counties will see about a 20% hike in their insurance rates. Less than 24 hours after the rates were released, I spoke with Insurance Commissioner Goodwin about when the new rates will take effect and how they compiled the numbers.
In every state, insurance companies have differing ways to request that their insurance rates be approved. And in many states, there's a system where the insurance companies will submit them for approval before they go into effect. And here in North Carolina, the rates are sort of consolidated. The rate requests are consolidated, and there's one filing instead of there being hundreds of filings from all the insurance companies.
You worked with the North Carolina Rate Bureau, which represents the insurance companies. The goal was to come up with a list of homeowners insurance increases that both the Rate Bureau and the Insurance Commission could agree on. But of course, it didn't happen on the first try. Tell me about the process of reaching an agreement.
My experts recommended and stated that the requests were excessive in nature and otherwise conflicted with what was allowed. I agreed. I ruled that there needed to be a public hearing, and in addition to that, I ordered a public comment period. We had about 8,000 members of the mostly from the coast who had input. In the course of the next several months after that, the state and the insurance industry ferociously navigated and through various proposals and were able to negotiate a settlement that is a fraction of what the insurance industry had wanted.
Now, on Tuesday, you signed a settlement agreement that would raise the overall statewide average home insurance rate to 7%. Are those rates spread out across North Carolina, or are there pockets where the rates are higher?
The lowest rate increases were actually in nine of the coastal counties. Nine of the coastal counties had 1% increase, which was, compared to Charlotte, which had 8.4% increase. And then you had another four or five coastal counties that had 3.4%, including a good part of Dare County, as well as some other counties along the coast, Currituck, Hyde, and Pamlico. And then along the southeastern part of the state, that the Wilmington and some other areas had 8.6%.
Carteret and Onslow County have a rate increase of 19.8%. And then I noticed that neighboring Craven County only had a 1% increase. Why is there such a difference for some areas?
Because North Carolina, like other states, they have the state broken down by territory. And these territories are devised based upon criteria the state and the insurance industry determines. Obviously, the closer one is to the water, then that affects the rate, and also the number of claims, the claims history, and the storm history affects the rate. And one of the reasons, and I'm glad you pointed that out, is that there was a split of the territories not too long ago, and the reason was that people in the western part of the counties you mentioned were upset that they were being treated the same as folks in the eastern part of those counties whenever the damage and the impact record was greater in the eastern part than in the western part of those individual counties.
In Territory 8, which includes Brunswick, Carteret, New Hanover, Onslow, and Pender counties, they experienced a 19.8% increase. How does that translate in terms of money?
Well, and before I answer that question, let me tell you this, is that as that document shows, the insurance industry, they said their data supported an increase in those counties of 119.2%. And that's excessive, that's unlawful, it's not allowed. And of course, they capped their request for that territory at 30%. And even once we scrutinized it and reviewed it and so on, we still were able to reduce that to the 19.8%. But that's a cap. Most people won't see that. The actual dollar amounts is that under the current rate, you would have your typical policy for a house would be $2,342. The impact would raise it to $2,806. So you're looking at an impact of about $450 for, you know, in that particular instance on average.
Have you had any feedback from county officials about what they think about these rate increases?
I've had some. I mean, no one likes to have any type of increase for anything. I mean, if folks could get our milk and bread and gas for free, we want it for free.
Now, what happens if people can't afford these rate increases?
Well, I mean, that's why we need to have competition. And as many companies say they won't write here unless they can charge enough for the risk. We need to have enough insurance companies here so people can choose and have a competitive market. If the rates are artificially low, then companies won't write here, and their only options then would either be to go to the surplus lines market, which is unregulated by states, or go to the beach plan, which is the market of last resort, or to go uninsured at all. And those are not good options, respectively. So the best thing is to try to have as many companies that you can that will write, and they will not write unless there's a range of rates that they can charge. You know, they can discount downward for the homeowner if they mitigate and if they do other things to lessen their risk.
The last rate increase was in 2009. If you could explain to me, though, why are the insurance rates increasing, and is this something that's going to happen every couple of years?
Well, as Department of Insurance experts spent months studying the request from the insurance companies that operate and cover homeowners insurance here, it became apparent that some sort of increase was justified largely due to the steadily rising cost of reinsurance related to hurricane risks and also to the costs related to the ongoing series of storms we've had all across the state. And then also the concern about availability. There have been a number of insurance companies who had testified to the legislative committees recently that they were going to have to pull out from covering North Carolina. And my job by law is that I'm supposed to have a balance to ensure that rates are not excessive, but also if some sort of rate adjustments are warranted, that they only be enough to help keep the market competitive and viable here. But it's a very complex issue. If we had not done this settlement, I fear that a court case would have led to a much worse result, and that would not be good for homeowners.
And lastly, when will the rate increases take effect?
It's July the 1st. And, you know, by law, insurance companies make a rate request every year. It's been 4 years since they last did it for homeowners insurance. They make a rate request every year on car insurance. We have the lowest car insurance rates in the South. But homeowners, they've chosen about 4 years.
I'm speaking with North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Wayne Goodwin. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, sir.
This is the Downeast Journal. A bill expected to be on the North Carolina House floor next week would make changes to the way building codes are adopted in the state. Jeremy Loeb of WHQR in Wilmington reports.
One major change in the bill would be that reviews for the adoption of new home and building standards would be conducted every 6 years instead of the current rate of every three. Republican Representative Mike Hager of Burke and Rutherford counties is a primary sponsor. He says the bill is about making home building more efficient and cost-effective.
Most builders are single entities where the owner is the builder. So every time you do a three-year cycle versus a six-year cycle, it increases costs for them. Increases the cost of them because they have to have a code book, they have to be trained, they have to understand the differences, and then it actually increases because you're almost always adding stuff.
Recommendations come out every 3 years at the national level. Environmentalists worry changing the rate at which the state adopts those changes puts the state behind the curve when it comes to standards for things like energy efficiency. Molly Diggins, state director of the North Carolina Sierra Club, says the bill especially impacts coastal residents.
If there are minimum building requirements, improvements in technology that would make homes on the coast safer, more resistant to major storms, that's going to affect insurance rates. Why would people on the coast want to wait, delay for 6 years, having those nationally recommended practices incorporated for new home construction?
The bill to slow the adoption of national standards does enjoy some bipartisan support. Susie Hamilton of New Hanover County is one of four Democrats to join the majority Republicans as a bill sponsor. I'm Jeremy Loeb in Wilmington.
Life has enough drama.
But other ducks are going to look at our kid and think, that duck is uglier than a mud fence. Ow. Somebody's been beating that duck with the ugly stick. People are going to look at our kid and yell, here it comes, Doc! Ow.
And reality.
All the hot air around here comes from old Mr. Big Pants.
Oh,
over there.
Please.
Find a way to forget your troubles and gather some friends around the radio this weekend.
Listen for Prairie Home Companion, Saturday evenings at 6 on all of the PRE Public Radio East stations.
This is Public Radio East.
My favorite programs, other than Morning Edition and the afternoon news shows, are Car Talk and Prairie Home Companion, because they make me laugh.
My favorite programs on public radio are Down East Journal for my local news source, and nationally, This American Life and The Splendid Table.
Folks who enjoy interesting programs such as Car Talk, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or Prairie Home Companion.
It's absolutely fantastic. I listen to Aaron Copland coming down here. One of the symphonies, the one that has the fanfare to the common man in it. It was just a wonderful, it made my trip so blissfully enjoyable. I just loved it. And I want to thank you for what you do for all of us in Eastern North Carolina.
I encourage all of you to support this valuable resource that we have, and you can do so by making your contribution. We invite you to become a member of the Public Radio East community.
Please support Public Radio East with a contribution today at publicradioeast.org.
Greene County is having financial problems this year that affect its local government as a whole. Interim County Manager for Greene County, Richard Hicks, says they have a major deficit.
Well, right now we've got about a $300,000 deficit between now and June 30th that we still haven't filled, and we've gone through virtually every department and tried to reduce costs on where we can. But we still don't have that deficit covered.
Hicks says they hope to resolve the deficit by July. One of the departments taking a hit is the Greene County Animal Shelter. For 3 years, the county has struggled to financially support the shelter. But in April 2011, Mother Nature made it even more difficult. A powerful tornado went through Snow Hill, barely missing the shelter. In order to prepare for an influx of displaced animals, shelter staff were forced to either euthanize some of the cats and dogs or find them homes. The shelter attendant at the time, Lynn Graves, took to Facebook and within 24 hours found homes for nearly all of the 51 cats and dogs. 2 years later, the shelter is still facing severe budget cuts and a host of other problems. Although the past has shown the Greene County Animal Shelter's resilience, many doubt its future. Stephen O'Connell reports.
The shelter itself is in distress and in February failed its annual inspection. Although the inspector noted the health and well-being of the animals she saw, the shelter still must fully comply with the Animal Welfare Act, and that means the major repairs are necessary. In the next 2 months, the Greene County Health Department and the animal shelter employees have to patch a leaky roof, scrape and paint parts of the fencing, repair the septic system, close the gaps that connect dog runs, replace the dog run panels, and repair the flooring. Director of the Animal Welfare Section, Dr. Lee Hunter.
If a facility does not meet the Animal Welfare Act, we have a series of things we go through with various people trying to bring them into compliance. You know, anything from, you know, working with them, talking to them, trying to get things fixed, to a warning letter, to a civil penalty, and we do have the authority to revoke a certificate or suspend a certificate or even to deny a certificate at the next time the license application is made.
When it comes to animal control services, the responsibility for its existence is up to local government. Over the past few years, the Greene County Animal Shelter has increasingly had to demonstrate self-reliance. This year, they've had 74 animals come in and have only euthanized 5. But with the $13,000 shortfall, volunteers for the shelter attendant, the animal control officer, and friends of the shelter online are concerned that they won't be able to both maintain the animals' well-being and fix the infrastructure. They also have a vacant position in their staff, and that position is frozen until July. Lynn Graves of the Greene County Humane Society is a voice for the shelter and works to get donations and find homes for the animals.
Shelter staff does the best they can every year in the wintertime on the north side of the building. They place tarps on the fencing to block the wind and that sort of thing. But, they're operating on a shoestring budget.
This fiscal year, the shelter received $145,000 from the county. But in December, when county officials realized the severity of the budget crisis, cuts were made. The shelter was housing 30 animals when we talked with them on Thursday. And with the lack of funds this year, they've been relying heavily on charity.
We have had quite a few donations. I personally picked up a large donation from a lady over near Grimesland on Sunday, and I delivered it on Monday. And I have a 2500 Dodge, and it completely filled up the bed of that truck and the entire back seat. Bedding, towels, some food, some cat litter, and some cleaning supplies.
Since the beginning of the year, the shelter received cat litter, food, washing machines, dryers, air conditioning units, paint, paintbrushes, new fencing, and money donations. But Graves says the contributions aren't enough.
What our volunteer groups in Greene County have been concentrating on is getting enough donations right now to cover the immediate need, but also to put in place a safety net.
She says the fallback plan would be a program that's able to bring in constant and scheduled donations. But most of all, the shelter staff, the volunteer organizations helping, and the health department, which oversees its operation, would like to get the animals adopted. Both the shelter and the Humane Society have a Facebook page that advertises the dogs and cats available. The new Leash on Life program trains dogs to prepare them for adoption. Public Health Director for the Greene County Health Department, Michael Rhodes, hopes they don't have to euthanize as many animals as they have in the past. He says last year they were putting animals down on a weekly basis.
Do we euthanize every animal that comes in within 72 hours? Because that's all it's required to be by law to hold animals is 72 hours before they can be euthanized. And that's what actually, something very similar to that had been going on in the years past, but what we've tried to do is actually increase our adoption rates tremendously, increase our rescues.
Because shelter staff only has to hold an animal for 72 hours, the euthanizations can easily become a common occurrence. But since the new adoption efforts, they've only had to euthanize a few. On Thursday, we talked with shelter attendant Gail Joyner about the situation at the shelter.
Quite honestly, the biggest challenges that we have right now is that we are hoping to come July 1, when the new fiscal year starts, that the animal shelter, animal control budget is back where it needs to be. Second challenge we're facing and actually being handled is most of the repairs are being done by volunteers. Probably by the end of another 2 weeks, our shelter should be up to par.
Although optimistic, Joyner is concerned about being the only attendant at the shelter and over rumors the shelter is closing. In the next few months, Joyner and the animal control officer at the shelter will be juggling donations, making repairs to the facility, and working on a budget plan. Stephen O'Connell, Public Radio East.
The Down East Journal is made possible by our members in partnership with Orthopedics East and Sports Medicine Center, specializing in the treatment of sports injuries, arthroscopic surgery, and rehabilitation, on-site physical therapy, and MRI, located at 810 W.H. Smith Boulevard, Greenville, and online at orthoeast.com.
My name is Kurt Williamson, and I'm the owner of Kitchen on Trent. We have been with the member program for approximately 4 to 5 years. It really promotes our belief and a sense of community. It's nice to see new people who come to the area with that card and try our restaurant out for the first time. It's a 2-for-1 special, and when we see that card come in, we know that this is a person that's somewhat a friend of ours already.
For more information on benefits of the PRE member card, go to publicradioeast.org.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. I was lucky enough this morning to be digging deeply in the soil to plant potatoes for the spring. And why do I call myself lucky? Because soil, when you think about it, is one of the most important things in our lives. It's beautiful. It has a wonderful aroma, especially when damp in the spring. And it's the source of all of our food, either directly or indirectly. Okay, maybe not all of our food. Seafood doesn't come from the soil. If you've never thought about how amazing soil is, take a minute today and do so. By definition, soil is made up of multiple things. It's the minerals broken down from the bedrock below, organic matter from all sorts of decomposing life, plant and animal, and pockets of air and pockets of water. Yes, the air and water are part of soil. That's why soil is different from dirt. Dirt, well, that's what you get on the knees of your pants when you're kneeling in the soil. But in place with organic matter, minerals, air, and water, and all sorts of living creatures, that's the soil. And you have it all around you in your yard. Ask how healthy your soil is and what that really means. Think of soil as living, because healthy soil is full of life. If you have organic matter in your soil, as any natural native soil would have in place, composed of decomposing leaves, dead microorganisms, dead plants, and even decomposing dead animals, that organic matter feeds more microbes than you can even imagine. These might be in the forms of bacteria or fungi or other microscopic animals like nematodes. These creatures, most of them, are very, very beneficial and helpful. And many of them were just starting to learn and understand how they help our plants grow and our crops perform well. Many of them were probably not even aware of yet. Some fungi might associate with the roots of plants and help extend their reach for water and food. But in order to have this healthy, microscopic environment living in our soil, they need that organic matter, and they need pockets of air and water. The soil needs to be loose and friable, not compacted, so that roots can penetrate it and microorganisms, water, and air can follow in the channels of those roots. If you have a garden, now is a great time to think about enhancing the organic matter and the life of your soil for spring. Use fully composted organic matter whenever possible, something that's been broken down already into tiny bits. Although even adding an organic mulch will, in the long run, enhance your soil, but in the short run, will require additional nitrogen to be used by those microorganisms to break down the mulch. In any event, think about the organic matter in your soil, whether it's for your vegetable garden, your flower garden, or even under your trees. Add an organic mulch, or if you're redoing a bed, stir in a large quantity, up to 50% of fully decomposed organic matter, and till it in deeply. Over the long run, it will bring life to your soil and enhance any plant that you grow there. Go out and look at your soil. Maybe lift a handful and smell the wonderful scent of a healthy soil in the spring and think about how you'll make yours even better for this year. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Hi, this is Tom the Jazz Man inviting you to join me this Sunday evening right here on PRE, Public Radio East, on all five frequencies as we explore the great sounds of America's music, jazz. It was made in America and now it's enjoyed around the world, and musicians all over the world are embracing this wonderful art form. Join us on Sunday evening right here on Public Radio East.
Faith and begotten, ladies and gentlemen, it's Pat O'Keeley with some good information for you. Save yourself some green this spring with the PRE member card. Two entrees for the price of one at dozens of participating Eastern North Carolina restaurants, two for one green fees at local golf courses, and for you travelers there, discounts at hundreds of establishments all over the country. It's like your pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. For more information, visit our website, publicradioeast.org. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show this week. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for features that you'd like to hear on the Downeast Journal, you can drop us a line at publicradioeast.org. You can also listen to archived editions of the Downeast Journal there as well. And don't forget, Daylight Savings Time is this weekend. Set your clocks forward an hour before you fall asleep Saturday night. Have a great weekend.